Good. So before we start the next Masecht, I wanted to just take a few weeks discussing certain important topics. This one pertaining more to specifically Parshas HaShavuot and what we find in Sefer Shmos regarding the role of Moshe Rabbeinu, and then maybe some halacha topics in the future as well. Maybe the next one we'll do will be some issues pertaining to Chukas HaGoyim. So you can spread the word if any of your friends are interested. Good. The Rambam writes in his Pirsha Mishnayos to Perek Chelek, the last Perek of Sanhedrin, that the Mishnah tells us that Kol Yisro Yesh Tam Chelek Olam Haba. But there are notable exceptions that you have that the Mishnah mentions, one of which is an apikoris. So the Rambam defines for us in the Pirsha Mishnayos exactly what is meant by an apikoris. And the Rambam writes it means a person who denies Yisodos HaTorah. That's the Chiddush that the Rambam writes, that there are certain principles of faith that we have. If a person will go ahead and deny it, it's not simply that he is in error, but rather that is the status that you have of apikoris. Just realize that this is considered to be somewhat of a revolutionary idea, that there are certain beliefs that you have in the Torah, certain that are considered to be primary, and others that are considered to be secondary. Other Rishonim certainly criticized the Rambam for this approach. The Barbanel felt, for example, that if something is clearly a tenet that the Torah prescribes, in such a case, there's no difference between something which is an ikar as opposed to that which tafel. And other Rishonim disagreed with the Rambam on the other extreme, commenting that the Rambam's list of what are considered to be kari emuna is much too extensive. The Rambam, as we know, has 13 principles of faith. Right, this is what we always reflect when we recite Yigdal, the piyut, not written by the Rambam, but written corresponding to the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah. Rav Yosef Albo, for example, is of the opinion that it's true, there are Ikari Emunah, but there are only three of them. Right, belief in Hashem, and the notion that there is Schar and Onesh, and a belief also in Yemosu Mashiach and Olam Haba. Right, this is commonly known to us as Malchiyah Sichronos and Shofras. That's what Rav Yosef Albo writes, that's why that occupies such a prominent position when it comes to the Tefillah and Rosh Hashanah, because those are the three Ikari Emunah, and he felt that the Rambam's list was considered to be too extensive. One of the Ikari Emunah that the Rambam has is the uniqueness of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's certainly the Torah endowed many individuals with Nevuah, but Moshe Rabbeinu clearly was in a class by himself, that B'chol Beisi Neman, who as the Torah says, Peo Peo Dabrabo, that Moshe Rabbeinu was not just simply one among the Nevi'im, but rather Moshe Rabbeinu was crowned with the status of being the Adon HaNevi'im. This is the basis of what the Gemara tells us in Megillah and Daf Beis, that Ein Navi Rashai V'Chadesh Davar. If another Navi subsequently will come and start tampering with the Nevuas Moshe, the Torah that we have it, so it's clear the Navi is considered to be a Navi Sheker. The Gemara writes in Yivamos and Daf Tzadim Abeis that sometimes as a Hora Shah, we can be told to do something that differs from the Torah. This the Chachamim have the right to do as well. They can be Oker Dover Min HaTorah, Bekum Vesei, and B'Shev Al Tasa. They can tell us not to fulfill a Mitzvah Sasei or a Mitzvah Losa. So we've discussed several times. We have the Sugyan Beitza and Dafei. But if someone will come and undermine any Mitzvah Satorah, in such a case, that already is considered to be by disregarding part of the Kari Emunah that we have. So no doubt, so crucial to our belief is the uniqueness that we have of the Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Matrix once gave an elaborate shir describing what exactly is that uniqueness, Al-Pidin. How does it manifest itself? And he pointed out that it would appear that there seems to be a contradiction that you have in two Parshias in the Chumash, in Parshias Yisro and in Parshias Bahaloscha, and a contradiction that you have within the very first Mishnah in Sanhedrin Daf Beis Amud Aleph. The Mishnah tells us the following. Let's assume you have the Sanhedrin Gedolah. So there are certain responsibilities that they have, one of which is to appoint lower courts. So the Gemara tells us that only the Sanhedrin can go ahead and appoint a Sanhedrin Lishvatim, a lower Sanhedrin that you have. How do you know that that's true? So the Gemara writes in Sanhedrin Daf Tezayin, Kid'ashkechan b'moshe de'uke Sanhedraos. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, as Rashi writes, you have in Parshas Yisro, he set up the whole system that you have of justice. And how do you know then that that requires you have to have a Sanhedrin? So the Gemara has the stunning phrase that Moshe Rabbeinu b'makom shivim v'echad koi, that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was the embodiment of the Sanhedrin. If this was a task that Moshe Rabbeinu did, that means it requires the tension of the Sanhedrin. How do you know that that's true? So Rashi writes in the Tezayin in Sanhedrin that this is what you see from Parshas Yisro. So Soloveitchik pointed out very simply that what you see from the Mishnah, the Gemara, and simply the Pashup Shat and the Chumash, is that Moshe Rabbeinu was not part of the Sanhedrin, but rather Moshe Rabbeinu was apart from the Sanhedrin, that he himself embodied, right, an independent authority. You know, that's what the Psukim tell us, that now that Yisrael said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Navol Tibo, that certainly will go ahead and wither away if you try to judge the people in their entirety. So therefore a system of justice had to be instituted, and it was clear that there was a hierarchy, and Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting on top. Right, if it was a davar hakatan, so then yishpatu hein, they could go ahead and handle that. If it was in fact a davar gadol, the Torah Tumah has an interesting ha'ara. When Yisro suggested that to Moshe Rabbeinu, he used the phrase davar hagadol, and when Moshe Rabbeinu instituted, he substituted the phrase of davar hakasher, because there's a major difference between a davar gadol as opposed to a davar kasher. Davar gadol has the connotation of a low claims court, as opposed to one where the monetary claim is one is in excess. And we know the halacha that the amount of the taina has little relevance to the complexity of the issue, whether it's considered to be a davar kal or whether in fact it's a davar kasha. But clearly what you have from Parshas Yisro is that Moshe Rabbeinu was acting completely independently. If an issue was brought to him, he did not require any other members of the Sanhedrin, but rather he would go ahead and act alone. And yet Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that it seems to be in contradiction to what the very same Mishnah tells us, because after all, from where do we derive the Sanhedrin has to have 71 dayanim? So the same Mishnah tells us, because the Torah tells us in Parshas Baloscha, Esfili Shivimish Mizikne Yisrael, Umoshal Gabehem, go ahead and gather 70 Chachamim, 70 together with Moshe Rabbeinu, serves as the body that you have of the Sanhedrin itself. Clearly the Mishnah is telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu was not acting independently, but he was acting as one of the Chachamim who made up the Sanhedrin itself. And again, it's not just simply a difficulty that you have in the Mishnah, but these Parshios that you have in Chumash, that whereas when it comes to Parshis Yisro, clearly Moshe Rabbeinu is acting independently, when it comes to Parshas Balos Chesli Shivimish, Moshe Rabbeinu was one of the members of the Sanhedrin. So that's the question that the Rav posed, that how is it that you understand, apparently, these two roles. So let me just give somewhat of an elaborate background before we get to what the Rav suggested is the Teretz. Starting with a very different model that you have, not Dayanim and not Sanhedrin at all, but let's start with the role of Eidim. That we know that there are many institutions that you have in the Torah where Eidus testimony is necessary, but there are two different types of Eidus that you find in the Torah. This is what we call Eidus Lebirur Hadavar, as opposed to Eidus Lekiyum Hadavar. Eidus Lebirur Hadavar means the following, that the role that you have witnesses simply is in order to go ahead and to verify whether something indeed occurred. The existence of the witnesses will not make or break, it will not create any obligation, but simply it will help us in sorting out the facts that we have to be able to determine whether what did occur, was that the truth or was it not. If I go ahead and I lend you money, so clearly there is what we call a shibud haguf, that you're obligated to pay me irrespective of whether witnesses are present or whether they're not. Let's assume I lent you such a small amount of money, it's not worth it for me to go in to secure witnesses and to press the claim, right? Even if that's true, certainly you are obligated to go ahead and to pay. Number one, there is a shibud haguf. Number two, possibly the Gemara mentions that priyas balchov mitzvah. Maybe it's a mitzvah to go ahead and do that as well. So the purpose of securing witnesses, let's say at a time of a loan, is not because the legitimacy of the loan will hinge on the presence of witnesses, but simply that pragmatically it makes it much easier for me to go ahead and to prove my case, if that's true. After all, we have a halachic principle of hamotzi michavero olav haraya, that the burden of proof rests with the person who is initiating the claim, and therefore if I say you owe me money, all you have to say is not true, and the burden of proof will be on me. In fact, the Gemara writes that there's an isra of lifneiver, to lend money to someone if no witnesses are present, because you're baiting the person to so easily go ahead and deny that that happens, and therefore, again, it will be very easy for him to go off scot-free and difficult for you to go ahead and to prove the case. But what is clear when it comes to Eidei Birur is that whether or not Eidim can be accessed or not, right, nonetheless, the obligation certainly is there. If someone goes in and damages my property, he is obligated to pay me regardless of whether I press the claim or whether it witnessed or whether it was not witnessed at all. This is very different from another case of Eidus that we refer to as Eidus Lekiyum Hadavar. That means, this is a coin, the term that Reb Chaim coined, he discusses it in Perek Daleth, Hilchos Ibn Chalitza, that there are certain institutions that you have of the Torah where the process or the halachic institution is not valid unless it is witnessed. It has nothing at all to do with verification. But the legitimacy of this institution requires that it be witnessed. This is what we assume Reb Chaim pointed out of Ein Davar Shebe'erva Pachos Mishnayim. This is how the Rambam understands. Institutions that you have which hinge on erva, marriage, divorce, gittin, kedushin. So in such a case we know that they require edim. Why is it necessary for witnesses to be there at a time of marriage? It's not because just simply to verify whether a marriage in fact took place, that perhaps somewhere down the road there'll be a dispute, and maybe there is a din Torah as to whether this couple was genuinely married or not, so we'll be able to go ahead and access two of the people who are there and say that we can testify that it occurred or didn't occur. That may be true, but that certainly is not the role that we have of Eidei Kedushin. Eidei Kedushin means very simply the whole institution of marriage rests on the fact that Eidim were present to witness the Maisa Kedushin. That's what the Gemara tells us, Amakadosh Beno Ben Atzmo. If a man will go ahead and give a ring to a woman and no Eidim are present, or even if only a single Eid is present, so in such a case, Ein Kedusha of Kedushin. The Kedushin is not considered to be binding whatsoever. So this is a very different type of Eidus that you have. This is what we refer to as Eidus Lekim Hadavar. No? Similarly, when it comes to a get, we require that witnesses have to go ahead and be present when the get is given by the husband to the wife. It's not simply because if the woman will want to go ahead and to remarry, we can secure witnesses to say we know that the get was given. That also can be an important role for witnesses to play, but it's a much more basic requirement, and that is that if a get is given and there are no Eidei Mesira, Eidim are not present to witness that that happened, the Gerushin is not a Gerushin. That means the institution that you have of Kedushin, of Gerushin, requires what we call Eidus Lekim Hadavar. So two very different types of Eidus that you have. Eidei Birur, as opposed to Eidus Lekim Hadavar. In fact, Tosus raises an issue in Sanhedrin Daf Tes regarding the following question. At what point in time does an individual Alpidin become an Eid? See, there are two possibilities, Tosus mentions. That normally, an Eid does the following. He witnesses whatever it is, right? A loan, a damage, a crime, whatever the case is. And then he goes to Bezdin to testify. So there are two key moments that you have. One is referred to as Shas Ri'iya, and the other is referred to as the Shas Haggadah. At what point, technically speaking, do you become a witness? Mishas Ri'iya, when you witness it, intending to go ahead and testify, or no, you only become a witness at the time of testimony itself, the Shas Haggadah. What difference does it make? Whether it's Ri'iya or whether it's Haggadah, Sotosis has two different nafkaminas. The first is the following. The Mishnah tells us, in the beginning of Maseches Makos, that we have a principle of Nimsechot Karov Apostle, Edusan Betela. Let's assume three witnesses come to court, and they are testifying together, and it turns out that one of them is Karov Apostle. His Edus is not accepted. So you could have argued, look, simply dismiss him and go with the remainder. All you need are two witnesses and you have it. So no, that's what the Mishnah tells us, right? Based on Psukim, that we assume that if one witness is ineligible, that doesn't simply impinge only on that individual, but rather on the credibility of the entire kat, the entire unit of Eidus as a whole, and therefore all of them, in fact, are dismissed. So there's a halacha that we have of a kat, that's what it's referred to in the Gemara, a unit of Eidus. So Tosus wants to know at what point are you considered to be an aid? When would we invoke this principle of Nimseh Karov Pasul Yusam Bateva? Only when people actually go to Bezdin and testify together, or maybe even a Chiddush, if there is Re'iyah together. If individuals will go ahead and witness a certain event together, let's assume with Kavanas Lahayid, having in mind that they're going to testify together, at that point in time we will say, these are witnesses, and Nimseh Karov Pasul Yusam Bateva, even at the time of Re'iyah alone. Or Tosus raises a second issue. We have a further principle, which is called Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. If a person is a witness, he can't wear two hats. He can't also be a judge. At what point do you become an aid? What does that principle mean? Does it mean that if I witnessed whatever is being disputed, I cannot be a judge? Or does it mean, a much more limited principle, if I testify in a particular case, I cannot serve as a dayan? So Tosa says again, it depends on when you become an aid. Is it Mishas Ri'iyah, or in fact is it Mishas Andada. So this is a major machlokus Rishonim that you have in the very beginning of Maseches Makos and Sanhedrin Daf Tes. At what point do you become an aid? So there's a crucial comment that the Ritva has in Kedushin and Daf Mem Gimel, where he writes the following: this whole issue that you have, when do you become an aid, Mishas Ri'iya or Mishas Hagada, is only when it comes to Eidei Birur. After all, if I am an aid who is called upon to testify, to verify whether something did or did not occur, so then you can argue, look, there are two crucial moments. There is the Re'iya, there is the Haggadah, and now you can ask a legitimate question: at what point do you become a witness, Mishas Re'iya or Mishas Haggadah? But the Ritva writes a very important chiddush that if you're dealing with Eidus Lekiyum Hadavar, in such a case, what is the role of the aid? Simply to witness. There's no Haggadah. It may very well be that years later, an issue can arise regarding a marriage or divorce, and if I was one of the Eidim, I can come forward and say, I was there, I was an aid, I have information. But that's not the role of Eidei Kedushin, Eidei Gerushin. Their roles will be called Eidus Lekiyum Hadavar. So the Ritva has a very important chiddush, and that is, even though many Rishonim assume you only become an aid at the time of Haggadah, the one day in Tosus, nonetheless, when it comes to Eidus Lekiyum Hadavar, you certainly become an aid Mishas Re'iya alone, because that is the entirety of your function. That's the chiddush the Ritva writes in Daf Mem Gimel. So the Ritva now raises the issue that, you know, when it comes, let's say, to a Kedushin, this should be a very common problem, that who are the ones who are witnessing the Maisa Kedushin? Certainly Krovim who are there, Psulim that are there. So in such a case, why shouldn't we argue that Nimtzecha Krovi Pasta Yusam Betela? Good Tosa says, because Haggadah is only a relevant factor when it comes to Eidei Birur, not when it comes to Eidus Lekiyum Hadavar. So the Ritva writes, the answer to this question is the requirement of Yichud Ha'edim. That's the Chiddush that Ritva writes, that it's necessary to express, to have in mind, that these individuals will serve as the witnesses exclusively. Let's assume many people go ahead and see something, but you and I have in mind that we are only testifying together, the two of us and none others. So even if there's a Karov who's watching, a Pasul who's watching, in such a case we don't assume the principle of Nimtzecha Karov Pasul Yusam Betela. So that's the Chiddush that Ritva writes, that you commonly see often in Chasanas, and that is that they have Yichud Ha'edim. They specifically designate that these are considered to be the witnesses to the exclusion of all others, to avoid this problem Nimtzecha Karov Pasul Yusam Betela. The Gemara is explicit in Kedushin Af Mem Gimel, that's where the Ritva discusses it, that you don't need Yichud Ha'edim to become an aid. So the Ritva just argues that means, as the Gemara says, you don't need Yichud Ha'edim to become an aid. However, if you have a situation where many people are watching as well, you need Yichud Ha'edim to avoid Nimtzecher Kavu Pasul Yusam B'Teila. If a couple is eloping, only two people are present, you don't need Yichud Ha'edim. It's not an inherent part of the Eidus that they must be designated, they must be appointed. It's not a halacha of Aminui, but in a common application that you have of Gitner Kedushin, where others are present, often family, in such a case you require Yichud Ha'edim. Right, it's Poshev Shat the Eidim themselves. Right, it's an interesting issue. Who does, in fact, that Yichud Ha'edim, who appoints? But apparently, if it's only to avoid Nimsech HaKaro Pasim, Yusuf HaTayla, so if that's the case, then if the Eidim alone would have that in mind, that would be sufficient. So this is one difference that you have of two different roles of Eidim. Eidei Birur, as opposed to Eidus Lekiyum Hadavar. The same distinction is true when it comes to shtoros. We have various different types of documents, right, that the Torah recognizes. Right? There are two basic categories that you have. One is called a shtar kinyan, and the other is called a shtar raya. This is a lengthy sugin kedushin, right? Rez Hashem will get to at some point in Daf Tes. Now, two different types, right, of shtaros. A shtar kinyan and a shtar raya. What is a shtar raya? Verification. Good? All the shtar raya is doing is empowering a person with evidence that something in fact occurred. Something is true. A typical case, let's say, of a shtar raya is a ksuva. Right? Let's assume, for example, that we go to a chasana. So at the chasana obligates himself to many different obligations that we have. Good? In the ksuv itself, it mentions the ikr ksuv, the tosefes, the nedunya, many different obligations that you have. Some of them don't even need the consent of the chasan, because the Gemara calls this a tnai bezdin. The chacham established that a chasan must, right, pay and support in a certain fashion, regardless of what he obligated himself to. Even if he will explicitly go ahead and state, right, I want this marriage, but I don't want any of the obligations of Ishus, right, we'll discuss the machlokas time where that is not an option. You cannot go ahead and link into such an Ishus. Ishus, by definition, has with it these obligations that are reciprocal between the husband and wife. Good? However, the husband is obligating himself to much more than that. The ksuva mentions not only what we call the ksuva, but there's a tosefes ksuva, there's an adunya, and so on. What obligates the chasan to go ahead and to fulfill these obligations? The answer is a kinyan is made. What kinyan is done at the chasan's tish? A kinyan chalipin. Chalipin is the most universal kinyan that we have in the Torah. After all, the Pasuk even in Rus says, l'kayem kol davar. This kinyan of chalipin can be used to establish anything. You can go ahead and purchase karka, right, property with a kinyan chalipin. You can go ahead and purchase metaltlin, movable objects with chalipin. And you can even create indebtedness. You can create the hischaivos, the shibud, with a kinyan chalipin. That's a very important chiddush. If I say that I will give you $1,000, technically, that's not binding. It has no teeth. If I make a kinyan chalipin to that effect, now it is considered to be binding. Right, the kinyan chalipin can create, it can generate a certain sense that you have of his chayvos. That's what we do with the chasan's dish. Why is the chasan obligated to make all these payments on death and divorce, and even during marriage? The answer is because he obligated himself through a kinyan chalipin. And what is the purpose that you have of the ksuva? The answer is the ksuva is just a shtaraya. All it says is that we, the witnesses, verify that we saw the chasan made this kinyan, obligating himself to A, B, and C. That's it. The purpose of the ksuva simply is a shtaraya. Good, a woman will produce the ksuva, and therefore the husband is obligated, right, in everything that is written therein. Good? That's one type of shtar. But then you have another, which is called a shtar kinyan. A shtar kinyan means that, no, that whatever we are dealing with, institution, the transaction, the gittin, the kedushin, is created by the shtar. Not simply it verifies that this occurred, but the shtar creates what it is. If I go ahead and I purchase land, right, with a deed, right, a shtar can be used as the vehicle of transfer. Sometimes a deed simply can be a proof. I have the deed, that means that we'll assume I am the owner. How did I acquire it? I acquired it by paying for it, most konos. But you can also go ahead and acquire property by using a shtar kinyan. So therefore there the shtar has a very different role. The shtar in such a case, right, is considered to be, right, a shtar kinyan, right? Let's say we do a mechiras chametz. We do many different kinyanim to make sure the chametz is the property of the goy and not ours. One of them is a shtar. It's not just a raya that the goy owns the chametz. It means we're transferring the chametz to the goy, right, through the vehicle of a shtar. This is what we call a shtar kinyan. Good? Then you have two different types of shtar kinyan. You have a shtar kinyan of dinim amanos, and you have a shtar kinyan of iser veheter. You have a shtar kinyan which doesn't affect dollars and cents, but a shtar kinyan which is affected ritual, which affects status. And those are three different shtaros. No, one is a get, right? That's a shtar kinyan of iser veheter, and the other is a shtar kedushin, which we don't normally find, that the marriage occurs not by giving kesev or shava kesev the ring, but rather through giving a shtar kedushin, and the last is a shtar shichur. If you go ahead and free an eved, you give him a shtar, and that's not just simply a proof that he was freed, but the freedom is secured through the mesiras hashtar. Good, those are three different types of shtaros that we have. We have a shtar raya, a shtar kinyan of dinim amanos, a shtar kinyan of isav heter. Just as an example, we only require lishma, that the shtar has to be written specifically having in mind the two parties, only when it comes to the last type of shtar. Right, a shtar kinyan of iser veheter. Good? A shtar kedushin has to written lishma. A get certainly has written lishma. Shtar shichur has written lishma. You can't just go ahead and fill in the blanks. If it's a shtar kinyan to buy property, so in such a case, that certainly, right, can be a printed text. Right? When the rabbi sells the chametz, he doesn't write the shtar mechiras chametz lishma, just takes a printed text, just fills in the blanks that you have. There's no need that you have for ksiva lishma. Rav Slavitchik pointed out also, that sometimes you go to a chasana, you'll see a practice of the ksuva being given by the chasan to the kala, and the witnesses are told, witness the mesiras haksuva. Right? Stay there, right? And bear testimony to the fact that the ksuva is being given from the chasan to the kala. Right? You see, this is a chumra bizman as a Rav Soloveitchik thought it was an utter mistake, right, this practice. Why? Just for the following. It's true, we pask like Uv Rabbi Eliezer that says, Edei Mesira Karsi, that when it comes to a shtar, Edim have to be present to witness the transfer. But that is only true when it comes to a shtar kinyan, not when it comes to a shtaraya. When it comes to a shtar kinyan, the Mesiras Hashtar is what creates whatever it is. Now, the Chalos Kinyan, the Chalos Ishus, the Chalos Gerushin is dependent on the Mesiras Hashtar. So when the Torah says you require witnesses for that, it means that you need witnesses who can verify that the shtar was given and that the Kinyan took place. When it comes to a shtar Raya, there's no concept whatsoever, right, of Mesira. What is the Raya? The Edei Chasima, the Edim who signed the shtar. No, it's not a raya. I have a deed, this house is mine, and it's not signed. Right? I have a deed that says that there was a marriage, a ksuva, but it's not signed. Unless it's signed by witnesses, how does it serve as any raya? So whenever you deal with a shtar raya, certainly then it's Edei Chasima, the Edim assigned. Edei Mesira is only a concept when it comes to a shtar kinyan. So Slavichik pointed out just example that certainly when it comes to a ksuva is not a shtar kinyan. There's no need whatsoever for mesira. Right? The kala should take it and put it wherever she feels secure, wherever you would put a deed to your house. She should go ahead and put the ksuva. It's a shtar raya that you have. But there's no halacha that you have that there is that function that you have of mesira. See, Tosus even points out in Gittin that a get in earlier times had a twofold function. Number one, the get is a shtar kinyan, right? That was the mechanism of divorce. Number two is that a woman possessing her get is a verification, it's a proof that she in fact is divorced. After all, the Mishnah tells us that if we don't know the status of a woman, and she comes and says, I was married but now I'm divorced, certainly she is believed. Right? That's what we call hapesh asar, who hapesh hitir. But let's say we know a woman was a married woman. We were there at the Kedushin. And all of a sudden she wants to marry someone else. So she says, don't worry, I received a get. Now that's considered to be a davar sheba ervas. We require verification that that in fact is true. So therefore the get will now serve what was a shtar kinyan, now will become also a shtar raya. If a woman will go ahead and show the get, now this get that serves the shtar kinyan becomes a shtar raya. So in a classic case that you have in the Gemara, where the get is a twofold process, the get was signed by witnesses, and also delivered in the presence of witnesses. Delivered in the presence of witnesses because it was a shtar kinyan, signed because it's a shtar raya. If, let's say, the get would not be signed, the gerushin would still be good, but if a woman holds on to a get that is not signed, that does not verify anything. All we know is that a sofer wrote that text, but we don't know that anything, in fact, happened with it. Good? See, Bizman has said we don't do this. This is one of the institutions of Rabbeinu Tam, that we didn't want women walking around with their get, because subsequently problems could, in fact, arise. I'll take a look at that get years and years later, and I'll say, you know what, something was misspelled. Something is smudged, the lettering is not clear, maybe the get is not good, that means the divorce never took place, the remarriage is no longer remarriage, children are mamzerim, can have terrible ramifications. So therefore, we don't allow that to happen, already from the time of the Rishonim. We go ahead at the time, let's say, of a gerushin, right, we take the get, we X through it, we literally rip through it, and we give the woman a separate document as a shtar raya. This is what is called a p'tur. So therefore, the get serves as the shtar kinyan, right, and the p'tur serves as the shtaraya. Good? These are two different shtaros that you have. So just like when it comes to edus, there's edi bir and edus the kimadava, there are two different types of shtaros that you have. There is a shtar kinyan and there is a shtaraya. This is all true when it comes to institutions that we have of edus. What about when it comes to the role of a bezdin? So this is also true, that there's a dual role that bezdin has as well. Let's start even simply with the bezdin of shlosha. The first mission in Sanhedrin tells us, the dinim amanos v'shlosha. You have a monetary claim, you go to three dayanim. That's the smallest bezin that we have. What is their purpose? Largely, the purpose is one of of Bezin Abir Hadavar. They will ascertain whether in fact it is true that you owe money or you don't owe money. That is what we call a Bezdin of Hora, of Hachra, of Birur. They have to issue a Psak Halacha. They have to say you are Chayiv. They have to say you are Potter. Right? That's what we call a Bezdin, which in fact is Labir Hadavar. But then there is another very different type of Bezdin, which is what we call a Maisa Bezdin, which is Lekim Hadavar. There's certain institutions that you have in the Torah where the Dayanim are not called upon to issue any Psak Halacha whatsoever. They don't say Chayiv, they don't say Potter, they don't say Tamei, Tahar, Aser, Mutter, anything like that. No? They simply go ahead and authorize a procedure of the Torah. Good? For example, the Gemara tells us, these are sugis you have in the fourth parak of Yivamos, and Daf Mem Hei, and Daf Mem Vav, Gerus. No? The Gemara tells us, Ger Tzarech Shlosha, Mishpak Sivvei. Gerus requires a bezin of three dayanim. What does that mean? Lekim Hadavar, not Lebir Hadavar. These dayanim are not called upon to issue any type of decision that you have. Chayev, Pater, Mutter, Aser. They're not giving up Psak Halacha. No, the purpose that you have of this business is what we call a kim hadavar. That means that just like, for example, when it comes to gittin kedushin, the Torah says that process is not legitimate unless it is authorized and witnessed by two, there are certain procedures you have in the Torah that must be done in the presence of a body of three, a bezdin. But the bezdin is clearly lakim hadavar. That's true when it comes to an act that you have of gerus, that you need a bezdin lakim hadavar. Good? The same thing, for example, is true when it comes to Chalitza. Now, Chalitza must be authorized by a Bezdin. The role of the Bezdin is not to issue a Psak Halacha Chayiv Pater, but rather the institution of Chalitza requires a Bezdin Lekim Hadavar. The same thing is true, the first Mishnah Sanhedrin tells us when it comes to Smicha, an unusual case, where let's assume the Sanhedrin issued a Psak Halacha that something is Mutter. And everyone went ahead and did so. And it turns out, terrible, it was not Techilo Shabbos, it was eating Chalev, something that normally bears with it a Chi of Kares, and B'shogeg a Chi of Karban. So I would have thought that everyone should go ahead and bring an individual Karban. So no, under those conditions, that Tzibur brings a Karban, that is what is referred to as a Par Helmadavar Shel Tzibur. This is an unusual case, it's a Karban Tzibur that requires Smicha, that you have to lay your hands on the animal, and that Smicha requires a Bezdin Lekim Hadavar. That has to be done in the presence that you have a Bezdin. Not Labir Hadavar, the Bezdin is not issuing any decision whatsoever, but again, it's a procedure that the Torah says must be authorized, must be done in the presence that you have of a Bezdin. So these are examples you have of Chalitza, or Gerus, or Smicha, where you need a Bezdin, but the role of Bezdin is a very different one. It is something which is the Kim Hadavar. And there are important differences that you have, whether a Bezdin is Labir Hadavar, or whether a Bezdin is the Kim Hadavar. The Rambam Shita, fantastic Shita that you have with many ramifications, is when we speak about Dayanim, often the Torah tells us Dayanim who have Smicha, the real Smicha of Ish Mipi Ish, Mimosh Rabbeinu. How do you know that that's true? The Pasuk says in the Shabbos is Kriyas HaTorah, V'nikrav Balabai Yisrael Elohim. The Gemara says that means Lashon Chol, right? It means you go to a Dayan who is a Mumcha, a Dayan who has Smicha. So if you have an issue lahalacha, right, a debate whether a person is chayiv or potter, you have to go to a bezdin of dayanim that are mumchim, that have smicha. Good? The Rambam's chiddush is the following. That only applies when it comes to a bezdin labir hadavar. If the bezdin is being called upon to issue a psak halacha, you're chayiv, you're potter, you have to have dayanim who are bikim bakolatarakula. You have to have dayanim who know the halachos backwards and forwards. You require smicha, you require mumchim. Let's assume the Rambam's chiddush is that we're dealing with the bezdin lakim hadavar. The Rambam writes there is no such requirement, right, of dayanim who are mumchim. Tosus is bothered, Nivamos, how do we do gerus bizman hazeh? After all, we don't have dayanim who are smuchim. So how can we do gerus? How can we go ahead and resolve our din Torah? Don't worry about that. When it comes to dinim amanos, the chacham have a more elastic authority. I discussed a little bit last week as well. But when it comes to issues of status, iser v'heter, if the Torah says you need mumchim, what right do we have to do gerus bizman hazeh? Right? So you know what the Rambam's answer is? That gerus never required smuchim. Because the whole reason for smicha is only when it comes to a bezdin lebir hadavar, not when it comes to a bezdin lekim hadavar. That's what Rav Soloveitchik pointed out. A crucial machlokus between Rashi and Tosus, whether smicha, right, is a function of psak din, of hora, or whether it's a function of bezdin. Tosus Ashita is everything requires a bezdin, requires anim who have smicha. And that's why Tosus is bothered by how you do geirus bismanazah. In the Rambam Shita, it's not true. Psak halacha requires smicha. But a maisa bezdin does not. And therefore the Rambam, when he mentions all the requirements of geirus, never mentions that the dayanim have to be smuchim at all. There is no such requirement that you have. They have to know what they're doing, they have to be trained, but they don't have to have the formal smicha that we call of ishim p'ishim os rabbeinu. That's one important difference that you have between a bezin which is the bir hadavar, a bezin which is the kim hadavar. Even Tosus raises nivamas nafkuf aleph, another possible issue. We're all familiar with the principle of ein bezin shakel. You can't have an even number of dayanim. You always have odd numbers. No, 3 or 23, 71. You can't have an even number of dayanim. At first glance, why is that? To avoid a stalemate. So Tosus is bothered. Is there such a halacha when it comes to a bezdin lakim hadavar? No, a bezdin which is the bir hadavar, I understand. They have to issue a psak halacha, tamei, tahar, mutar, asr, chayav, patur. I understand. You're going to have four dayanim, you're going to have a split. What's going to happen, no? But let's say you have a bezin for gerus, a bezin for chalitza, a bezin for smicha. Is there anything wrong with having an even number? No one is issuing any psak halacha whatsoever, no? That's what Tosus is bothered by. Because even in the context of smicha, the Gemara seems to apply the principle of ein bezin shakel, you can't have an even number. So Tosus has two views, Nivamos Nafkuf Aleph. One of them is the following Chiddush, and that is every bezin by definition must be an odd number, irrespective whether it's the bir, whether it's the kima davar. And the second teretz of Tosus, right, is the following, that no, sometimes a bezdin, l'kim hadavar, is going to be called upon to issue a psak halacha, right? It could be in chalitza. All of a sudden, we'll start having a major debate whether the chalitza is ksher or not. So the bezin is going to have to be able to issue a psak halacha. So you have to have a bezin who can potentially itzer a psak halacha, not because chalitza inherently demands an odd number, but because of the possibility that issues can arise. That's the second day in Tosus. The only reason we want an odd number for chalitza is because what happened if they did it on the wrong shoe? What happens if they forgot to spit? What happens if they didn't read the parsha? Right? Is that makev? Is it not makev? L'chachila, b'dievet, and so on. So you have to have dayanim there who at least know whether the chalitza in fact was good or whether in fact it was not. There's a 2 days that you have. Yevamos kufalof menal. That's the chiddush that you have in Tosus. Good? So again, two different types of bezdin. Lebir hadavar, lekim hadavar. So we have Eidim, we have Shtar, we have bezdin. Now let's talk about the Sanhedrin. Same thing is true when it comes to the role of the Sanhedrin itself. Good? Sometimes the Sanhedrin is necessary for what we call lebir hadavar. There are certain crucial decisions, piskei halacha, that don't simply affect individuals, right? But they affect all of Knesset Yisrael, right? They require the attention of the Sanhedrin. I'm always very fond of saying it's true even Bizman Hazeh. Certain global piskei halacha, right, don't require the formal Sanhedrin, but they require the representatives of Knesset Yisrael, Gedolei Yisrael. They require more than the average person that you'd ask a shayla to. Okay? Enough said. Good? Important issue. Good? This is true when it comes to the Sanhedrin, right? The Gemara says, Kol davar ha-gadol yavi olecha. No? Let's assume, for example, a Kohen Gadol kills someone. No, that's something that affects all of Knesset Yisrael, the Mishnah tells us. I would have thought, let that be decided by a regular court who handles capital offenses. No, that's not true whatsoever. Such an important psak halacha, that requires the Sanhedrin. So sometimes you require a Zaken Mamre, sometimes you can have a Kohen Gadol, that requires the attention of the Sanhedrin. But what is the purpose of the Sanhedrin? To issue a psak halacha. They have to say Chayiv, they have to say Pater. Good? Sometimes now you have certain procedures that require a Sanhedrin, but l'kiyum hadavar, nothing at all to do with the psak halacha. Right? For example, minui melech, they have to go ahead and appoint a king. Appointing the king requires the participation, the authorization of the Sanhedrin. It's not a psak halacha. Say chayiv or pater. Everyone agrees he should be king. No, but the procedure of minui melech requires the Sanhedrin. Let's assume, for example, the Mishnah says again, you want to go ahead and expound the boundaries of the Beis HaMikdash. You want to enlarge the Azari. You want to enlarge Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is not just a city. Yerushalayim has a Kedushas HaMikdash. No? That's where you go ahead. That's the Machne Yisrael. That's where you eat. Kodshim Kalim, Maaseh Sheni, and so on. That's called Lifnei Hashem. Right? That's not just a territorial issue. That's infusing Kedusha. That requires a Sanhedrin Lekiyum HaDavar. So this is true when it comes to the Sanhedrin as well. Sometimes the Sanhedrin roles in terms of Birur, sometimes their role is one that you have of Lekiyum HaDavar. So good, this is the models that you always work with. The different roles of Shtoros and Edim and Bezdin, even Sanhedrin itself. So with this background in mind, this is what Rav Soloveitchik commented when it comes to the role of Moshe Rabbeinu. Part of our belief of the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu, this is what Rav Soloveitchik said, B'Shem Reb Chaim, is that when it comes to issues of Psak Halacha, Moshe Rabbeinu is in a class by himself. That's what the Torah tells us, B'chol Beisi Nemanu. Moshe Rabbeinu is Neman when it comes to Piskei Halacha. Imagine that a shadow would be raised, and Moshe Rabbeinu would say that Hashem told me, or based on what Hashem told me, this is the Halacha, and we would vote, and Moshe Rabbeinu would be outvoted. Right? Can't be. No? When it comes to Psak Halacha, right, Rav Soloveitchik said B'Shem Reb Chaim, not only is it wrong, but it's apikorsus to assume that could have happened. Because that undermines the whole uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is part of the Kari Emunah. Rav Soloveitchik told us an amusing story that there's a Sefer which is written. You can see it. It's printed. It's called the Seder Hadoros. So, in older times, it used to take a long time, right, to print a Sefer and to raise funds for a Sefer. So normally what was commonly done is they used to write the Sefer and they would use all the dedications and the Haskamos, leave them blank, right? And then the person would go around, right, and he would collect money for the Haskamos, get the Haskamos, and then he would go ahead and fill it in afterwards. So this is what the order of the Seder Hadoros did. He wrote the Sefer and he went for various individuals for a Haskam. And that would be the last thing the printer would print before it was sent out. So he went to Reb Chaim for a haskama, and the author's style of drush, it's not that popular b'zman hazeh, but in older times, if you look, for example, in some of the Sfarim, the Mishnah Melech, the Parshas Drachim, it's a common style of drush, is to take a machlokes, let's say of Rishonim, or take a machlokes that you find in the Gemara, and try to plug it into Tanakh. Right? We don't usually, right, Arachron don't speak that language as much, no? Trying to take a machlokas in the Gemara and show that the dialogue in Chumash, this one was reflecting this view, this one was reflecting this view, and so on. But in certain schools, that was a common style that you have, trying to give a halachic bent, so to speak, a machlokas Rishonim to the personalities that you have in the Chumash. So this is what was written that Sefer, and it came out that this machlokas, Rambam Raivid, the Rashban Ritva, was a machlokas between Moshe Rabbeinu, right, and others in Chumash. The dialogue of Moshe and Paro, for example, was reflecting this machlokas. So Reb Chaim's response was that's apikorsus. That if Moshe Rabbeinu will say that this is what the Psak Halacha is, you cannot go ahead and say, I disagree. That's Pel Per Darabo. That's Bechol Beisi Nemonhu. So the reason it's amusing is because the Sefer was already printed, and he wanted the Haskama of Reb Chaim. So in the introduction, he tells you the whole story, and he tells you not to read that piece that he wrote because it's apikorsus. And that's how the Sefer is printed in that fashion. So Rav Soloveitchik told us that aside from the Maisa Shehaya, he thought that it was a very profound chiddush, and that is that, again, Moshe Rabbeinu, when it comes to Psak Halacha, cannot be undermined. He is in a class by himself of Parapar Dabba, but that certainly is not what is meant by Loba Shemayim. Right? That if Moshe Rabbeinu will say, Hashem told me this, we can't go ahead and dispute it and say, nonetheless, that's the case. And that is clear from Parshas Yisro. Parshas Yisro, there was a hierarchy that you had of Dayanim, where Moshe Rabbeinu was completely functioning independently. When it was a Davar HaGadol, a Davar HaKasha, it wasn't necessary for Moshe Rabbeinu to convince the Sanhedrin to vote with him on this issue. Once he would go ahead and issue a Psak Halacha, that was it. You couldn't go ahead and disagree in that sense. So what Rav Soloveitchik pointed out was the following. As great as Moshe Rabbeinu was, when it came to issues that you have of Hora and Hachra, of Chayiv and Pater, Tamei and Tahor, let's assume you needed Kiyum HaDavar. You needed a Sanhedrin to authorize or to validate a certain procedure. So in such a case, Moshe Rabbeinu was only a single individual. If you had a Kiddushin, Moshe Rabbeinu could not serve as Edus L'Kiyum HaDavar. Now, when you're dealing with a procedure that requires that sense of authorization, there certainly Moshe Rabbeinu was unable to go ahead and to act alone in that way. And that's what he pointed out reflects the two different halachos that you find in the Mishnah. When it comes to Birur HaDavar, Moshe Rabbeinu acts completely independently. He doesn't need anyone's haskama. When it comes, for example, to a gerus, to a chalitza, when it comes to an active Sanhedrin, the Kim HaDavar, in such a case, Moshe Rabbeinu certainly required the participation of other Chachmi Yisrael as well. So if Soloveitchik pointed out that there's an incredible deal, okay, sometimes you read the Rambam, you don't notice, right, the nuances. But the Rav pointed out the following chiddush that you have, that many, many different halachos are takanos of Moshe Rabbeinu. And there, the Rambam writes, Moshe Rabbeinu instituted them unilaterally, did so completely alone. No, the Gemara says, for example, Kriya Satorah. No, the obligation to go ahead and lane three times a week. That was the takanos Moshe. The Gemara writes in Bava Kamma, Daf Pei Beis. That's what the Rambam writes in Perakei Beis of Hilchos Tefillah. Moshe Rabbeinu did that. Ezra embellished, added to that takana, how many aliyahs, how many psukim, but the takana to have the Kriya Satorah the way we do, in such a case that initially was the takana of Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, that's the Rambam writes, Perakei Beis of Hilchos Tefillah. Avelos, right? 7 days of Avelos, right? Not a din daraisa. Right? The Rambam writes, Avelos Yom Rishon is daraisa. Shiva was the takana that you have of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Tikkun in Yisrael. That's what the Rambam writes in Paragala Filachala Pivachosavda. Let's say the halach of Sholim Bidorshim Yanoshayom. That you're obligated to expound on the halachos of Yantiv during a Yantiv. That was a takana that you have of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam in Paragid Gimel Pivachos Tefillah. All of these were takanas that you have of Moshe Rabbeinu. There the Rambam uses the following language that Moshe Tikkun in Yisrael. Moshe instituted. Doesn't mention anyone else together with Moshe Rabbeinu. But then you have a couple of places where the Rambam slips in the phrase Moshe Rabbeinu u'beis dino. Moshe together with the Beis Din. The Rambam writes in the very beginning of Hilchos Malachim that Yehoshua was appointed a melech. And who appointed Yehoshua the melech? The Rambam writes Moshe Rabbeinu u'beis dino. And the Rambam in Perek Vav Hilchos Beis HaBechira, the same thing, to be Makadesh the Klei HaMikdash, the Mishkan, and subsequently, to be Makadesh the Beis HaMikdash. In such a case, the Rambam writes, Moshe Rabbeinu, but together with the Sanhedrin. Is not a Psak Halacha. The Makadesh the Ir Va'azara is not a Psak Halacha. So there the Ram just uses the phrase of Moshe u'beis dino, Moshe together with the Sanhedrin. When it comes to other Piske Halacha that Moshe Rabbeinu declared, in such a case the Rambam writes, Moshe Tikkun in Yisrael. He thought that diuk itself is this whole issue that you have of the role of Kiyum versus Birur. So Soloveitchik said, after giving the whole elaborate shir, pointed out the following problem. Everything is fine and good, however it seems to be against what the Gemara writes in Bava Kamma, for the following reason. That Gemara talks about Kriya Satorah, institution of Kriya Satorah. The Rambam writes, who instituted laning? Moshe Rabbeinu Tikkun in Yisrael. Right, Perakid Beis of Hilchos Tefillah. But the Gemara doesn't seem to say that. So it's not a kash on the Shir, a kash on the Rambam. The Rambam writes, Moshe Tikkun in Yisrael. The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara writes the following, that Kriya Satorah was instituted in the following way. The Gemara quotes the pasuk that you have, Vayelchu Shlosh Yasyom B'midbar V'lo Matzu Mayim. Good. The Gemara says, Dar She Reshumos Omrim That Ein Mayim Ela Torah. A reference that you have to Torah. It's a very poignant Gemara. It means that Torah is not a luxury. It's the most basic necessity that we have. You can't live without water. You can't live without Torah. That's why, right, Kriya Satorah was instituted. The Gemara says, Bnei Yisrael were traveling in the Midbar, and they didn't have the opportunity to hear the Dvar Hashem. The Gemara says, Miyad Nilu. Literally it means they withered away. They couldn't survive. So the Gemara says, as a result, Amdu Nevi'im Shebineihim V'tiknu. So therefore, the whole body of the Nevi'im who were present, there wasn't a Sanhedrin then, the whole body of Nevi'im who were present went ahead and instituted Kriya Satorah. So Rav Soloveitchik has pointed out, it's very striking that specifically when the Gemara speaks about the institution of Kriya Satorah, the Gemara mentions that it was not instituted by Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather was instituted by the Chachmei Hador, by all the Nevi'im who were present. And yet the Rambam writes, understandably, Moshe Tikkun in Yisrael. This was a takana just like Avelos, Shiva Simi Hamishta, Sholim V'Dorshim, where the Rambam writes, Moshe Tikkun in Yisrael. So how do you understand that apparent discrepancy? So Soloveitchik just added the following point, that there's something very striking about that Gemara. When did that take place? That was before Kabbalah HaTorah. Very striking idea. There was a takana of Kriya HaTorah even before Kabbalah HaTorah. We'll have to see why that should be. So Slavetra just added the following. No doubt that Pel Pe Dabra Bo Bechobe Sinemun, who Moshe Rabbeinu was in a class by himself, independent of anyone else. But when was that true? So that was the Chiddush that the Rav suggested. That uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu was only post Kabbalah HaTorah. When Moshe Rabbeinu was, right, the Mekabel HaTorah, and he was the one who disseminated the Torah to us, so at that point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu was recognized as being the Don HaNavim to extent that in Horah you cannot disagree with Moshe Rabbeinu. But one exception was the initial institution of Kriyas HaTorah, where Kriyas HaTorah was instituted before Kabbalah HaTorah. Rashi already writes on the pasuk of Sham Sam Lachol Kumishma Pesam Nasahu that Bnei Yisrael already in the Midbar, prior to formally receiving the Torah, they were given certain partials of the Torah itself to involve themselves. Sheyis Askuba. After all, Slavetchik pointed out that when the Gemara tells you have to read the Torah, it doesn't say you have to read the Torah because there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It doesn't say there's a mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. The Gemara says the need to read the Torah was because Bnei Yisrael couldn't survive without the Shmias Dvar Hashem. Here they left Mitzrayim, they experienced a great sense of Gilui Shchina. All of a sudden now, they didn't experience that to the same degree. Miyad Nilu. It was necessary to have that opportunity to seek out the Dvar Hashem even before the Torah was formally given. That was the takana that you had of Kriyas HaTorah even before Kabbalah HaTorah. It's very unusual. When we usually think of mitzvot that predated Kabbalah HaTorah, we think of Bris Milah, and we think of Avraham Avinu Davening Shachris, and so on. The Gemara says, Kriyas HaTorah predated the obligation that you have of Talmud Torah. So that was the deal, Rav Slavetchik pointed out. Precisely because the context was before Kabbalah HaTorah, that's why at that point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu did not go ahead and institute the Kriyas HaTorah independently, but rather that's why it was instituted as a joint unit of all the Chachmei Yisrael, Amdu Nevi'im Shebineihem B'tiknu. So maybe you can raise then the other side of the question. That explains why the Gemara mentions that it was a joint effort. But why does the Rambam write Moshe Tikkun on the Yisrael? So for this, Rav Slavetchik pointed out, we discussed this once before, that the Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayos in Chulin Daf Kuf, it's a very important Kiddush. Right, that Kiddush is what the Rambam writes, Torah Tziv Lana Moshe. The Torah was given to us, right, through Moshe. What does that mean? So the Rambam writes the following important idea, that the reason that we fulfill mitzvahs, Bizman Hazeh, is not because of what the Avos did. Right, it's technical machlokas that you have, Rabbi Nachum, regarding Gid Hanasha. So the Rambam writes, Besim Libcha L'Ikar HaGadol HaNichla B'Mishna Hazos. The Rambam writes, I want you to pay special attention to the principle of this Mishnah, in Chulin Daf Kuf, and that's the following, that we fulfill the mitzvahs Hashem because they were given to us at Har Sinai. If someone will ask you, why is it that we do Bris Milah? The Rambam writes, you will not say it's because Avraham Avinu was given a mitzvah in Parshas Lech Lecha, but you'll say because it's mentioned in Parshas Tazria, that Isha ki Tazria v'yoda zacha. Right? That's what the Gemara has the phrase, in that context of Milah, that nikne Torah v'nischadshu halacha. That you cannot learn halachos from Kodah Matan Torah. You can learn what the Avos did to serve as inspiration, to serve as a vehicle of Avodas Hashem. But bottom line, if you want to know how to do Bris Milah, you don't judge based on Avraham Avinu. The Gemara writes in Yevamos, Defiant Days, Avraham Avinu did Bris Milah differently than we do Bris Milah Bizman Hazeh. The Gemara says that Tzivui of Avraham Avinu was not the same as ours. That's why Shuv Moes Bnei Yisrael Shenis, the beginning of Sefer Yoshua, they had to rectify the Milah. They had to remove another layer of skin, referred to as the Or Hapriya, because the milah that was the commandment up until then had changed. No, that was the halacha, Moshe Misinai. The mitzvos that are given to us are because of our Sinai. That's in fact what the Rambam writes. That's the chiddush, he says, of Torah Tziv Lana Moshe. The reason we go ahead, the Rambam writes, and don't eat from the Gid Hanasha is because that was the mitzvah given to us at Har Sinai, not because that the Bnei Yaakov did so. That's the chiddush that you have that the Rambam writes. So Soloveitchik pointed out the following chiddush. Anytime there was a din d'oraisa, right, that was given before Kabbalah Satara, and let alone if that would be a takana, but everything changed at the time of Kabbalah Satara. That required that the dinim d'oraisa had to be reiterated, and even the takanos had to be reinitiated as well. Soloveitchik pointed out a beautiful observation. The Gemara has an issue. Who are the ones to go ahead into Davin? Right? How do we know Tikva Shachris Minchan Marav? The Gemara begins the fourth parak of Brachos. Now, the Gemara has Chafav and Lebeis. Either it was what? Tzvidim Tiknu? Right? Or Avos Tiknu? Rami Tzat Yaakov Shachar Minchan Marav. Horeh El Snow, the Karban Tamid Shal Shachar, Karban Tamid Shal Ben Arbayim, and at night, they Varmu Pedarim. Good? 2 days that you have in the Gemara. How does the Ram Paskin? So they should point out a very interesting Chiddush. You look in the Ram in Hilchos Tfilah. How does Ram Paskin? Karbanos. You look in the Rambam Perek Tes of Hilchos Malachim, when the Rambam tells you the history of mitzvos, the Rambam writes, Avos. You want to know who daven first? Avram Avinu. You want to know why we daven? Karbanos. That's the Chiddush Soloveitchik pointed out. The fact that Avram Avinu davened is of great, great historical importance. It shows you a person can take an initiative for Avodas Hashem. But if you want to know why we daven, Shachris, Minchin, Marav, with such regularity, with Zmanei HaTfila, and so on, that's because of Tzmidim Tiknu. Even though Shachris, Minchin, Marav is only Durabanan, but even Dinim Durabanan were instituted and reinstituted after Kabbalah Satara. That was the Chiddush Rav Soloveitchik pointed out. So good, when the Gemara mentions in Bava Kama Daf Pei Beis, who was the one who instituted Kriya Satora? So what's the answer? Hamdu Neviim Shebnei V'tiknu. The whole unit that you have of the Chachma Yisrael. Perek Yud Beis of Hilchos Tefillah. Why do we lane? The answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu reinitiated it as a takana. At that point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu Lachar Kabbalah Satora, Moshe Rabbeinu no longer acted together with all of the Chachma Hador, but at that point, B'chol Beis Nemanhu, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to go and institute unilaterally. So that's not a steer at all. Moshe Rabbeinu tikkun on Yisrael. And the Gemara says, who initially did so? Of course it was Moshe Rabbeinu together with all the Chachamim who are present. That, Rav Soloveitchik thought, was the answer of the two parshas that you have in Chumash. Parshas Yisrael is purely dealing with Psak Halacha. You never find in Parshas Yisrael anything else other than issues of Mishpat. Parshas Baloscha deals with the needs of the tzibur as a whole, not psak halacha, chayiv potter. That was the halacha of Esli Shivimish, Izikni Yisrael. This was the shiur that Rav Soloveitchik gave, and then there was the second half. Well, to get into it now, the second half was the significance of Kriya Satora. Now, fascinating idea, that Kriya Satora is meaningful to us, right, irrespective of whether there's a mitzvah or not. Talmud Torah is important to us not just simply because there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It's because Talmud Torah is the vehicle, right, of developing the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Miyad Nilu. So if you can have a chiyuv of Kriya Satorah and Talmud Torah before Kabbalah Satorah, it tells you one thing, and that is our experience of learning is not just simply because it's a mitzvah of Torah. Wouldn't make sense to say there's a takan of Lulav Nesrog before the mitzvah of Lulav Nesrog was given. But the reason it makes sense to indicate that when it comes to Talmud Torah is because Talmud Torah is so much more simply than just a mitzvah b'gisam b'yom v'layla. And that's why the Gemara says that the reason it was instituted was not simply because mitzvah, there was no mitzvah at that point, but miyad nilu, that Bnei Yisrael couldn't survive, in fact, without it. So here, this is, Rav Soloveitchik has written this up in the Shurim Lezeich Rabba Mori, in the piece Takanas Moshe, explaining, right, the uniqueness that you have of Kriya Satora. That's what Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, that Kriya Satora is much, much more than Talmud Torah B'tzibor. The experience of Kriya Satora is to try to reenact, to relive, that sense that you have of Kabbalah Satora, stressing the relationship between Knesset Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why Ram Runrug, for example, writes you have to stand for Kriya Satora. You don't have to stand for Talmud Torah. But if we're speaking about, again, echoing that forged relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what we call the Shmias Devar Hashem, so in such a case, that's why the halachos of Kriya Satora are supposed to resemble, right, that moment that you have of Kabbalah Satora itself. Okay. So next...